This is a time of seasons, isn't it? I don't know if you've seen it. The wind is blowing. The leaves are flying around the windows outside. You don't know which season it is. Is it sweater season? Is it short weather? You never know. By the afternoon, it'll be time for shorts. By tomorrow morning, it'll be freezing again. Seasons are fickle little things. There are seasons in life. There are seasons with the world beyond just the four you learned in elementary school. There are seasons when the world feels like it is moving along and nothing could stop it. And there are seasons when it feels like the world is shaking beneath your feet. You know both of those feelings. You know what it's like to be confident. You know what it's like to be sure. You also know what it's like when the news cycle seems to be speeding up, when the ground of daily life feels less stable, when you sense that you're spending more energy holding things together than you are living inside of them. At least my childhood experience was that I learned two things that seemed very, very important when I was a child, and so far they've never been used. Number one, stop, drop, and roll. Never had to do that. Number two, when if you fall into quicksand, don't struggle against it. As a kid, I was sure that I'd catch fire and find quicksand on a daily basis. And so far, I haven't. I've only ever known one person who's been in quicksand, a wonderful woman named Daisy who got stuck in quicksand with her five children, young children. And so with them crawling on her, she crawled herself out of quicksand. That's the only horror story I have about quicksand. But that feeling and that lesson we learned about quicksand, I think, holds relevant. When you feel like you're stuck in quicksand, metaphorically speaking, in life, struggling against it seems instinctual, but is often the wrong choice. Because sometimes it's not a matter of the struggle we can put up or the fight we can give. It's a matter of learning how to be in it rather than trying to get out of it. And sometimes that's not even a big global story that can trap you. It's something small, close to home, tremors. Those things tend to unsettle us the most. A relationship that grows tense, a friend that drifts away, a job that feels insecure, a child's anxiety that you just don't know how to fix. A moment in the night when your mind just doesn't shut off anymore so you can't sleep. These are the things that add up until it feels as if the very foundations of life are shifting under your feet and you don't know if you'll ever get out. That's not a new feeling. Ancient Israel knew that feeling well. In fact, that feeling has been around since the garden. Ancient Israel lived with earthquakes, metaphorical and literal. They had political earthquakes of nations rising and falling, threats to the border, rumors of war, leaders who promised more than they delivered. They knew what it was to long for something steady, something reliable, something that would not crumble when everything felt fragile. And in that longing grew a familiar prayer. They prayed for God to be their refuge, to be their strength, be a place where their hearts could rest, because they had no other place to go. No other sphere of their life was a place of rest. Not the politics, not the world news, not church life, not home life, not work. They just had no refuge anywhere. And maybe you've prayed that prayer recently, not in those exact words, but with a heavy sigh, or in the tired way you shut your laptop at the end of the day, or in a way that you've just whispered, "Lord, please," when you just have nothing else to give. Maybe you've prayed it without words by simply needing a moment of peace. It is into this deep human longing for safety, for stability, for a place to stand. That's where Psalm 46 speaks with a fierce, steady confidence. It's not a psalm of escape or denial. It's a psalm sung from within a shaking, from people who have learned to trust a God who remains faithful even though nothing else seems trustworthy. And so we listen to this ancient song not as spectators, but as fellow travelers. We hear it in the faith of people who dared to believe that God's presence could hold them while the rest of the world trembled. The word of the Lord from Psalm 46. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth should change, though the mountains shake in the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble with its tumult. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of the city, and it shall not be moved. God will help when the morning dawns. The nations are in an uproar, the kingdoms totter. He utters his voice, and the earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. So come, behold the works of the Lord. See what desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes war cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. So be still and know that I am God. I am exalted among the nations. I am exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us, and the God of Jacob is our refuge. The psalm does not pretend that the world is calm. It does not say, if troubles come. It says, though. Though the earth should change, though the mountains shake, though the waters roar and foam, there's no hypothetical here. There's no wishful thinking about an untouched life. This is real language for real reality, for real fear, the kind that wakes us up, the kind that tightens our chest, the kind that makes us wonder if things will ever settle down again. These are days when the shaking is not just external, when anxiety runs so deep that we can't quite find our footing, when grief does not feel like a passing storm, but more like erosion, and it slowly pulls at the edge of our strength, when our families, our schools, our workplaces, our communities feel divided, unstable, when the nation feels on edge, when the world feels combustible, when even our spiritual lives feel thin, stretched, tired. These are not signs of failure. These are signs of being human in a world that trembles. But we don't just face that shaking. We respond to it, often with instincts that promise refuge, stability, hope, but they just can't ever really hold under the weight of our own hopes. We try to control everything around us. If you haven't noticed, you live in a place where that's bread and butter. We try to control just about every variable we can find. That's why you people are here. That's why you have the jobs that you have. You're really, really good at trying to control all the things and to manipulate the world around you. Because we cling to certainty, to routines, to strategies. And the ones that used to work, we think should still work. And we don't understand why they don't. We seek safety in an illusion that if we can work harder, if we can plan better, if we can anticipate more, if we can just control more, we can keep the mountains from shaking. And sometimes that means we throw ourselves into our productivity, and we think that if we just stay busy, the shaking around us can stop. sometimes we seek refuge in distractions. So whenever you can't control it, you distract yourself, whether that's scrolling or consumption or noise. Find me a place in the greater DMV area with no noise. I double dog dare you. Try to find it. People have tried before. I don't know if you've noticed. There are hints. There are signs that if you're not paying attention, you'll miss. If you go to Georgetown, for example, you'll notice that they have too many cupcake places, and they're famous for cupcakes, yes. And if you go to get a cupcake in Georgetown, if you pay attention, right down the street, you can have lunch in a place where they film the X-Files. And then right across the street from that, there's a prayer labyrinth right on the water of the Potomac. Did you know that? Do you know there's a prayer labyrinth right there on the waters of the Potomac? It's hard to find a place without noise in this city, because noise is what we turn to when we can't control the rest of it. But it's there, if you look. And none of these things are wrong in and of themselves, but none of them can do what you want. They cannot steady your soul. They're not going to make you feel better. They cannot give you the peace that Psalm 46 declares. And so this psalm, it meets us in an honest place, whether you like it or not. The world shakes, and that includes you and me, and we shake with it. But the psalm does not end in that honesty. It holds us there long enough to name the ache, but also long enough to refuse an easy answer. It does not strand us there in a shaking world. It prepares us for the surprise of a God who steps into a trembling world, not from above, but from within it. God is in the midst of the city, not gets there, not travels to, doesn't commute. There's no commuting God in the story. God was in the city before it started shaking, so it shall not be moved. God is with that city, and it shall not shake with the rest of the world. This is the gospel of this particular psalm. God does not wait for a crisis. God does not wait for the calm after the crisis. God was already there before, long before, and will be there long after. God enters this quaking and stands at the center, the very epicenter of the shaking of the earth, and God becomes a stability that we just can't ever replicate, no matter how hard we try. And for Christians, this psalm's confidence leads us somewhere even deeper, to a particular person, not just a promise. Because the refuge that Israel longed for became visible in Christ. The God who stands in the midst of the shaking world becomes flesh and dwells among us. And nowhere is that reality proclaimed with more sweeping, more breathtaking clarity than in a song in Colossians. The word of the Lord from Colossians chapter 1. May you be made strong with all the strength that comes from his glorious power, so that you may have all endurance, patience, joyful giving, thanks to the Father, who has enabled you to share in the inheritance of the saints in the light. He has rescued us from the power of darkness and transferred us into the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For in him all things in heaven and on earth were created, things visible and invisible. Whether thrones or dominions or rulers or powers, all things have been created through him and also for him. He himself is before all things. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, so that he might come to have first place in everything. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him God was pleased to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, by making peace through the blood of his cross. This is no small claim. This is not a gentle affirmation that Jesus was some wise teacher or powerful prophet. This is a cosmic declaration. Christ is the image of the invisible God. The very shape of God's presence in the world. All things were created through him, but also for him. He is before everything. And here's the line that reshapes, I think, this whole psalm for us. In Christ, all things hold together. I want you to sit on that for just half a second while the projector resets itself. Just a half a second. In Christ, all things hold together. Think about what that actually means. All things. The things that make sense, but also the things that don't. The things that feel steady, and the things that feel broken. The things we can control, and the things that you could never dream of controlling, no matter how hard you try. The things that tremble beneath our feet, and the things that are always rock steady. And then the hymn makes its boldest claim yet. The one who holds all things together is the same one who reconciles all things together. It's one thing to make two different opposing things stay together in one room. It turns out you can have two different political parties all gather in the same Congress building at the same time, and they can be there, and they can be held in place together. It is another thing entirely to expect them to be able to reconcile their differences. Do not underestimate the power of what Paul proclaims in this passage. He doesn't just hold everything together. He makes them all make sense together. Because refuge is not an escape. For God to be refuge is not an absence of trouble. It's not an absence of shaking. When you take refuge, the trouble still exists. The thing you're hiding from is still there. Refuge in Christ is stepping into the shaking world with God and holding the world together from the inside out. We think of refuge as going somewhere to hide. When the psalmist envisioned refuge with God, it's not about going somewhere to hide. It's a matter of God coming to you in the midst of the problem itself and saying, "Let me make it all make sense. Let me reconcile this." So it's no longer a problem, but it is all whole again. Let's fix it. It's the difference, I think, to oversimplify this way too much. It's the difference between a child coming into their parent's bedroom in the middle of the night saying they're scared of the monster in the room, and the parent having to go to the room to tell the child, "Let's make sure the monster's cozy and comfy too." The cross is this surprising place where refuge isn't hiding, it's reconciling. One thing you should know about me, if you want to know anything at all. If not, that's fine too. One thing you should know about me, when it comes to TV or movies, I want two things out of what I consume, what I watch. Number one, I want it to be an escape. Reality TV is not for me. I have enough reality, I don't want that. I want to be able to lose myself in a story in another world and get lost there for just a little while. I know it's escapism, but I think sometimes escapism is a good thing. Number two, I really, 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 really want the bad guy and the good guy to be friends at the end. That's what I want out of the TV that I watch. I love a story that has conflict, yes, but the conflict is not solved by defeat. The conflict is dissolved by reconciling. That's the TV I love to watch. That's the movies I crave, because I think the world needs more of those stories where reconciliation is possible. The cross is a story of defeat for most of the ancient world. It's a place where someone dies. Somebody has defeated their enemy and won and then left a trophy for everyone to see. That is what a cross is. And God says, no, I don't think so. Let's use this sign of defeat and prove that it's actually a chance for us to reconcile with those who thought they could defeat us. Not to defeat them back, but to reconcile with them. So Jesus gets nailed to a cross, yes. And he looks at the person who's nailing him to the cross and says, it's okay, we'll work this out. I forgive you. He reconciles before somebody's even asked for it. He tries to mend a relationship that's broken that hasn't even been recognized as broken. The cross is a surprising place where refuge becomes reconciliation. Christ does not protect us from the world by sealing us off from it. Christ anchors us in the world by placing himself at the very trembling epicenter. The cosmic Christ is also the crucified Christ. The one who rules over everything and holds everything is the one the world thought they defeated. And because of that, the world is held together not by force, not by control, but by a self-giving love. That is the refuge that Psalm 46 is anticipating. This is the stillness beneath the shaking. This is the river whose streams make glad the city of God. This is the presence that keeps us steady while the earth moves. And if this is who Christ is, the one who holds all things together and the one who reconciles all things together, then our lives, you and me, we begin to take shape, but not around fear or control, but just mere participation in his work, in his reign over creation. What does that look like? It looks like parents who release the pressure they put on themselves to hold every detail together and decide to be patient instead and just show up, just to be there for their kids. Not to have it all figured out, not to have it all planned out, but just to color with them, to do life with them. It looks like choosing to listen more than to manage. Did you know that when people talk to you, you don't have to plan your reply? You can just listen. You don't actually have to say something back. That is an actual option. You could just listen to someone. You don't have to manage the conversation. You don't have to strategize. And that's true with your relationship with God, too. You don't have to strategize with God. You could just listen. You could pray. It looks like trusting that Christ is holding all of us because we just can't. For parents, I think that means it looks like trusting that God is holding your child when you cannot. It looks like a community that refuses to be swept up in the currents of fear or division. You don't have to be afraid because they tell you to. You can choose instead to be a place of hospitality, gentleness, patient listening. We could be a community that reveals Christ's stability, not by winning the argument, but by creating space where weary people can breathe. It looks like individuals who carve out moments of holy stillness each day. Not to escape the world, but to anchor yourself in the presence of Christ. To be still and know that he is God. That's not withdrawal. That's recalibration. It looks like choosing reconciliation over resentment, even in small, ordinary ways. A phone call to someone you've avoided, a soft word in place of a harsh one, a habit of prayer for those who frustrate you, the beginning of healing in places that have just long been sore. It looks like disciples of Jesus refusing to measure their worth by productivity or success or control, and instead letting their lives flow from the truth that Christ holds them together, even though they can't dream of holding themselves together. It means becoming, by God's grace alone, a people who carry peace into trembling places, people whose confidence is not in our ability to manage life, but in Christ's promise to hold all things together. People who know that refuge is real simply because Christ is real. And that is why we come to this table today, where we remember that refuge is real because Christ is real, tangible. The place where the words of Psalm 46 and the hymn of Colossians meet in flesh and blood, it's here that Christ is our refuge, here that Christ holds us together. It's here that Christ reconciles us to God, through God to each other. And through us, God reaches toward the rest of the world. This table is not an escape from a shaking world. It is God's claim that nothing in that world could ever separate us from the love revealed here. It's at this table we receive what we cannot produce: peace, presence, steadiness, reconciliation. It's here that Christ offers himself, not as an idea, not as a doctrine, but as bread for the hungry and a cup for the thirsty. It's here that this cosmic Christ who rules over the universe becomes close enough to taste. It's here that the crucified and risen one gathers us into the life that he holds together. So come, not because your feet are steady, but because Christ is. Not because you can hold everything together, but because he can. Not because you found refuge, but because he is refuge. Come to the one who stands in the middle of the shaking world. Come to the one who is your strength and your song. Come to Christ who holds all things, including you, with love. Let's stand and sing.